at the end of your life? What will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, the World Messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. We're in the third season of the show, and we're bringing repeated guests here back for this season because things are never as delicate as being right now in regards to risk management, safety, cybersecurity, among many other components that we're seeing. And I have absolute pleasure to bring back here with you a conversation with subject matter expert Chuck Brooks, who is not only being Georgetown University professor, who is teaching this and experiencing this firsthand with his Fortune 1000 clients, as well as obviously being a contributing writer on cybersecurity and emerging technologies for Forbes, working with the government in so many different capacities with different systems and infrastructure from DHS and others, as well as Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, the World Messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. Today, I have a guest in our third season of Legacy Leader Institute. Oh my goodness, sorry.
That's okay.
I don't know why I'm doing this. Okay. Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, the World Messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. Today, we have a very special guest that is coming and joining us right here. Chuck, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be back. I appreciate it. I love your show, and I'm eager to get into some conversation on what's happening.
I'm so glad to find the time, and I know that this is our third season, and we're glad to have you and this third season back again, because we're living in very chaotic times right now, and we're seeing so many things happening simultaneously, and many organizations cannot handle very well. And you did some amazing work. You published the book, which we'll get into in a second, but you also continue to be very visible and very vocal about what is happening and how we need to position. So do you mind sharing a little bit of insight? What do you see right now as the major issues and concerns that you have, and then also greatest opportunities?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's timely that it's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Because I think one of the biggest problems still, despite all the efforts in the last decade or so, is that there's a lot of ignorance out there about cybersecurity and the risks and threats we face. Depends what level you are, but it's still that, you know, there's more breaches than ever, more ransomware than ever, at least in terms of volume of dollars and being extracted. So I think that the part of the challenge here is still educating the public that, you know, we're in a new world, era, a new era of digital connectivity, and what was in the past doesn't apply now. And they need to protect their identities. They need to protect their personal wealth and anything that's private in their own lives. And if you're a company, particularly a small, medium business, you really need to bolster yourself, because you're now more of a target with artificial intelligence and other things being brought online. And the fact is it's wide open. And there are a lot of challenges because we're moving so fast with generative AI and other applications of technology that it's making it, it's a two-sided coin. It's making it easier for the adversary to launch attacks, but it also provides us some opportunities to defend ourselves better. But I think and just an overall thing is just really this awareness and understanding of what kind of new digital ecosystem we're living in, and how we have to adapt and how we have to protect our privacy and everything else that goes along with cybersecurity.
That is an excellent point. And question is, again, are we fully aware of, and then what do we choose to decide to what kind of actions to take, right? And we're seeing still very interesting data and statistics, as you just mentioned, that things are just, unfortunately, even with the knowledge that we have, not as rapidly changing. And what do you think is some of the key contributors to that?
I think the first thing is expanding connectivity. and the speed of connectivity. The world is getting more and more connected, which means more of an attack surface. You're seeing the Internet of Things come more online. You know, billions of devices now, like say 50, 70 billion people, the devices attached to the web. It might be much more than that. But, you know, I think, so everything is basically an angle for breach and expanding the internet and stuff. Everything else creates a vulnerability that we have to understand. And then we're trying to also mitigate some of these solutions with regulations and compliance, which is a whole other issue. And so I think that area, you know, the connectivity and the fact that we have to, you know, have policy behind it and strategies and risk management, which we're lacking. We've been traditionally reactive rather than proactive. So I think one thing we have to change is that we have to get looking forward. And because of these new technologies and because we're going to be facing in the next decade, we have to prepare now.
That is excellent points. And a question it is, again, how organizations are pushing that. And we see a lot of reluctance right now, even leveraging internally in an effective way artificial intelligence, because implications of the risk are still, for a lot of companies, unknown or not necessarily already vetted and a position for success, let alone, obviously, how clients are going to continue to be served. And from that perspective, I'm curious, obviously, you've been working in private and public sector, and we see major gaps on both sides. Where do you see some great opportunities from your perspective?
Well, I think there's been a change in the last few years, and it's a good change. When they spun off CISA from DHS, they basically wanted to make it a public-private operation, where they reach out more to the critical infrastructure providers. And the first thing you saw was, okay, we need a zero trust model to follow, know who we're connected to, identity access management critical, what's in our network, devices, people who left, who have access. All that stuff was never touched before, and now it's become mandated, and it's being followed pretty closely, both in government, it has to be in the government, in the private sector. Second thing that they've implemented is called security by design, which has been around too. But we're replacing a lot of these legacy systems. And the way to do that is you have to plan and have a strategy ahead of time to protect it. And we didn't do that when we built the internet. So a lot of this is just sort of patchwork and trying to put both things on. But now we have an opportunity, I think, with some of the new kind of technologies coming out in the new buildings and stuff, to really design stuff with security in mind first. So I think that's the positive changes. And I think that also artificial intelligence is being adapted in the right way so far by a lot of security operations centers, where it's being used mostly for threat intelligence, basically separating false positives, and also being used by analysts to help them write reports, which is more of the mundane stuff, but it frees up time. And because there's such a lack of experts out there, I think that's been quite a help. And again, as I said earlier, conversely, the threats now being posed by phishing, where anyone could go out and get a phishing kit on the dark web and now use a generative AI to exponentially send it to many, 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 many targets is making it much more risky.
That is excellent point, specifically, as you mentioned, for dark web and targets that are, because it's faster, a quicker way to really do that, and then do it and deploy it in so many different directions. And one of the biggest, obviously, issue is the people factor, right? Where all the risks are coming back. And I'm glad you also mentioned the zero trust, because we're seeing not only mandate and regulations, but it's like, if you don't have an infrastructure that truly can contain that, you will never be able to meet the deadline and not be as effective. And we're seeing a lot of organizations already scrambling, and question it is, are they focusing on the right things?
I would say for most organizations, they're probably not, largely because they lack the expertise, and the C-suite is still, the CISO is still not part of most C-suites. So, but there's a lot of tools out there that they could use, like NIST frameworks, MITRE frameworks. MIT just came out with a great framework too. So I think the first thing that really anyone has to look at is a risk framework, and it may be industry specific, but the information is out there. And I think the task for us is to steer people in the right direction. So hopefully people listening to this podcast, if they're in a small, medium business particularly, we'll look at their industry and go to a NIST website and see what they need to have in a risk management formula before they do anything. And most companies just don't have the expertise. And I think one of the things I think the Security Exchange Commission failed on last time, when they did one good thing, which is the reporting of breaches in 24 hours or 48 hours. But they originally were looking at requiring a cybersecurity expertise as part of the C-suite for public companies. And that got pushed away. And I think until we expand the knowledge and look at cybersecurity as not a cost item, but as a vitality item for anyone to thrive and survive in this digital economy, we're going to continue to have failure.
That is so true, but also so unfortunate, right? And we also have a very different margin when we look at the Fortune 500 companies, what their budget is and what they have capability-wise to create that safeguards and infrastructure for it. But it's quite different when you're dealing with the small companies or medium-sized companies, not only different budgets, but also, as you mentioned, also skill sets as well. So how do you feel like, how would you recommend to augment the cost, but also that accelerate the learning? Obviously, being a professor and teaching cybersecurity, I'm sure you have some really great insights in that.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm happy to see that more people are being directed towards cybersecurity, which is a broad area. It's soft skills, technical skills. It's so many different elements. And I think with this generational, it's going to improve. And so part of my work in teaching is certainly to help educate the next group of people coming and take these leadership roles in these companies. And hopefully they do realize that this is not just an IT issue that has traditionally been, that it really needs to be pushed to the front of corporate strategy. And that's what I think, the task is, or the challenge is. And it's really to educate people. Okay, you know, we're in a different economy. This is not what it was 10 years ago. Everyone's connected. Companies that are hit by a cyber attack and go out of business quite easily. And 50% of the small businesses too. And even large businesses, even small things could cost them billions of dollars, like we just saw with CrowdStrike. So, and that wasn't even a cyber, that was an IT incident. So we have to look at things differently. And if you're a company out there and you're not prepared and you think that it's business as usual, that you're now maybe you're using a payment system in your retail store or whatever, you're a target. And everyone's a target, and even more so now, because the visibility is very easy for the hackers to find right now, particularly with machine learning tools and other things. It's just too easy. And so unless you fortify yourself up front and have a strategy, a resilient strategy, because likely you will get hacked. Everyone sort of does at some point. You have to know what you need, what policies, how you can communicate. Do you have your public relations part of this, your reputation? So there's so much that goes into this now that I'm hoping that, by promoting it and talking about it as much as possible, that it'll go from industry to industry, and more people that are growing up in the system will understand that, this is not business as usual, that we really need to change our paradigm.
That is excellent. And from that perspective, obviously, when we look at, I'm just curious, how do you see emerging technologies now being a good contributor, besides just to look at as a threat and part of that solution?
Sure. Well, I just wrote the book on that. And I think that it is so much of an impact, and will be even more of an impact shortly, that the story behind this is that 5 years ago, in my graduate course, I wrote my own course called Disruptive Technologies and Organizational Management, and it really focused on mostly IoT, some AI, and other technologies, mobility, and everything, etc. And I went to look at it last year, and it was obsolete already. So I rewrote the course and restructured it, which is a process in itself with the university, if anyone's ever done that, a good one. Because you really do learn, I realize that we're changing at such a Malthusian rate, right now. It's just things are happening so rapidly. These technologies are already impacting us. AI has been around, but now with generative AI, it's spreading like wildfire. Everyone's using it for coding, for writing, for analytics, for creating large language models. There's all kinds of opportunities out there. And we're just seeing all the majors go into it and invest heavily into it, from OpenAI to Google, Microsoft. Everyone's in it, and so they're shaping the whole way we do work or do business. So that's really a major factor from that. And then I see down the line that, you know, we have to look at that these technologies are really fused. IoT, Internet of Things, smart cities, is fused with machine learning and artificial intelligence, how it operates. So everything is connected, and how you protect yourself is also required with all these elements. And, you know, it's not just artificial intelligence that we have to look at and worry about. Now, soon will be quantum. And now the Department of Defense already requires quantum resistant algorithms to go become a vendor. So it's going to require, actually. So that's a new era. And we used to think that we're 20 years away, 30 years away from, you know, quantum computing. But we already have elements of it now. We have photonic quantum computing. We have quantum algorithms. The Chinese have made some amazing entanglement experiments with communication. So, and there's even a rumor that they're able to decrypt, our strongest military-grade encryption. So there's a lot to be worrying about, and we have to understand these issues. And so, again, that's why I wrote the book, is sort of keep a sort of, as well as sort of layman and someone that's more sophisticated, that's really sort of a resource or a primer. So you can look at all these different technologies and say, okay, what are they going to fit in the cyber ecosystem? And the last half of the book is really risk management. Okay, now we have to look at things differently now than we did in the past, because the capabilities of these technologies, or that are enabled, the tools by these technologies, have changed the ecosystem. So we have our same preparations that we had before. It's not going to work, and it wasn't working anyway. So we have to look at restructuring the way we look at stuff, re-strategizing the way we look at our risk management, and look at all these things up front.
That is excellent. And I love what we're speaking to look at. Obviously, your book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but what's really interesting, gives a little preview on Amazon to kind of see what's all about. And then inside cyber, kind of like a peek, obviously, as you mentioned, from AI to 5G, LOT, and quantum computing, those are big, huge elephants in the room that are right now affecting. I know that a lot of companies are barely scratching AI, right? Either they like it or not, they're very reactive to it because their employees are using it and they may not have a provision yet. Yes. Or idea how they want to leverage that. They don't have a governance or even processes that are going to help to figure this out internally. And then when you add 5G and speed and everything else that's related to that, quantum computing is something that we've seen coming more and more, and we've seen what Tesla has been doing, Google and some other companies. But I'm curious, when you look at these four different new emerging technologies that you addressed in your book, who is doing very well? Let's just kind of go down the road. And who is doing AI very well, in your opinion, and it's a good role model? Who is doing 5G very well? LOT or you know, quantum from your perspective?
Well, you know, I think it's the Wild Wild West right now, so it's hard to really make a, you know, they're jumping all over the place. Like Sam Altman's been back and forth between companies. So all I can say is that all the major companies are investing heavily in it. And they're still looking at least trying to put some guardrails in some of these things, particularly with AI. But they're really still in mostly the learning experimental stage. I mean, Google's recently said that they think it's capable of reasoning now, their models, their LLM models with AI. So I think they're learning as we're going along. And I think that the recent EU artificial intelligence policy directive, and the one that we followed at the White House one recently, which is a lot less, really more than a directive than just basically what do we have to look at. I think you're going to see some governance issues coming into this. And one way I could actually say that this is definitely the case is that if you look at the federal government now, they've created positions called Chief Artificial Intelligence Officer. This is basically a position that wasn't around a few years ago. And these people are looked at, and they're tasked with not only the security aspects, but also looking at the efficiency and operational aspects that AI plays in changing how you operate as a business, or in this case, as an agency, and how you can use all your data from human resources to analytics, everything like that, for the public good. So these positions are exciting. I know DoD has one, Commerce has one, Treasury has one, DHS is looking at it in a big way. So I think we're going to see a lot more of this kind of thing happening. And I think we have to, because we have no choice, because we don't really know what's going forward. And, you know, there's a lot of innovative companies, particularly in the quantum side, that are using different approaches, using it, you know, because it's more in material science than it is physics, necessarily, than computing at this point. But it's going to be exciting to watch what happens. And I, you know, I think a lot of the companies are competition is a good thing. So I think we're going to be able to evaluate, hopefully, objectively in the next couple of years, some of the capabilities that are most useful for us.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of times we hear is like, and I love what you also emphasize, that these roles never existed before. And it's so interesting to see, even just on LinkedIn, for example, how many roles are being listed, and they're expecting 3, 5, 10 years of experience, which is in a way almost like Mission Impossible. And it kind of feels like a joke in a way, right? But we also see constantly issues where, as you mentioned earlier, organizations are not necessarily investing in that development, and we see gap in leadership, we see gap in new technologies and understanding around them, and then also frameworks and issues related to like, where do we even start, how do we, when we really move things forward, and how can we accelerate this momentum, right, of transformation and innovation. So I'm curious, when you think about it, obviously with your students and practical application, what would be some of the steps or suggestions for someone who just want to tackle one of these emerging technologies? Let's just say AI. What would you say in order to really go in the right direction, what would be some of the core things for organizations to then need to take care of it from the cybersecurity perspective?
Well, I think first they have to look at, you know, what type of organization they are, because AI is a broad area, and it's still primarily machine learning, what we're basically using in the security sense, but also in the operational sense too. And so I think a lot of that depends on understanding the technology itself. And there are a lot of primers out there, and a lot of people, you know, that are available that have worked in AI and stuff, and particularly working with these models. So I think that's the first thing, understand what it is. And then it doesn't, because it's AI, it doesn't necessarily mean it applies to everything. You know, it depends what kind you're doing. If you need analytics, there's a lot of availability of great analytics out there already that can be used you know, can do things much faster than you could in the past. And same with planning, you know, architectural planning, all this kind of stuff is really a big enabler. The second thing, after understanding what it is you have to look at the regulations out there, because they've looked deeply at the risks, the bias, all these other things. And again, I could go to the EU model, because that's more a punitive model, which means it's a little bit more serious in the implementation. But if you look at what they've looked at overviews, you can get an idea of where it's going, what they fear, and how it's best used. So you could do that. Then the third thing is, you know, I tell them is that, okay, all these types of technologies, particularly AI, have benefits and risks. What are the risks? What are the benefits? You know, understand the vulnerabilities and the positives, and devise a risk management program for, if you're working for a company that meets the requirements of what you're doing. If you're in energy, you have a different compliance regulatory issues. But if you're in manufacturing, you're dealing with a whole lot of things, particularly supply chain risks. And maybe AI could be a benefit to understanding where the vulnerabilities and discrepancies are, helping create policies across your platform for every vendor involved. So there's a lot of different things that can be done, and it certainly is a good tool if it's used right. So I'm excited about it in that sense. I think that, again, technology is how you use it. And there are a lot of benefits right now. And I think we don't have a choice anyway. So I think we have to understand what's going on. And it's pretty exciting. And if you look at, you know, the edge of things, where you're looking at the research of the neural connectivity between brain and a machine, you're seeing where it's going. It's really, you know, going into us. We're really becoming, we'll become a cyborg type human, not in the immediate future, but not in the too distant future either. We're seeing it with the phones that are now almost glued to us, but and implants and chips, but you're really looking at really augmenting the human, and with entire artificial intelligence agents and things like that now would have personas, create and provide advice. We're living in a society that's going to be more like the Jetsons every day.
And that is scary for some people. And when you look at it, it's like, okay, do we really want, and how far it want will go? And if it's still not regulated, what implications is it going to have? But we also see the very legitimate fear factor that a lot of organizations and individuals are worried about. What about my job? It's going to be all automated. Am I going to be replaced? And how can I insert myself? How can I also continue to create and be relevant and have sustainability or sustained through the work, but also sustainability of actual business model, a concept of it? And what's some of the trends do you see there? And what were some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's definitely going to have an impact on the economics of jobs. It's too early to tell. I mean, there's different debates on that. There's McKinsey people that think it's actually going to create jobs just in new areas, and it's retraining. There's those who are more of a skeptical that say, well, you know, it's going to just do what we did with factories. It's going to automate everything and people will be able to work. But even with that, there was retrained skills and people in the factory working those works found other things. So I'm pretty optimistic that, first of all, it's not going to happen quickly. You know, personally, you have to understand, you have to have the human in there to understand the context of how AI is used and where it's used. It's not just something you plug in. And so you're going to have other things around it. And just like every other industry, I think it'll just be a specialization in the industry, like a tool that's going to help facilitate optimization and performance within the industry, or within the company. So I think, I'm not so down on the fact that it's going to have a changes immediately. I mean, again, though, there are legitimate fears. And one of the things you alluded to is, our privacy right now. Vint Cerf, creator of the internet, Google, said, we don't even have privacy anymore. Many people say, anytime you're on the internet, of course, you don't have privacy. You know, your data is out there. So, but with AI, it'll be able to look at everything you've done and said and basically consolidate it and synthesize it in under a second, and it's available. So in terms of research and things like that and privacy, it's really problematic with hackers using it for social engineering. The positive things with industry, with like particular medical research and other places, it allows for a better drug discovery, new types of applications of material science, all kinds of interesting things are being discovered in physics and et cetera, with enabling factors of AI. So again, like everything else, getting technology is interesting, but you have to understand and cultivate it.
Excellent. And I'm glad that we still have opportunity to shape this together and look at it through multiple different perspectives. And quite a bit, frankly, holistically, right? It's like, if we don't have that view, we can always have not only blind spots, but also tremendous risk. And that's what we're trying to solve here. So I'm curious, since not many people are talking about quantum computing, and since also that on the flip side exponentially is moving faster, and we're seeing gigantic computers that can process so much. We're seeing some things that are being captured in space specifically, because that's the arena also you've been playing in.
Yes.
And how much actually, not only it's a memory and capacity to really monitor galaxy and planetary shifts and changes there too, but also for the further reach and space discovery. So do you mind sharing a little bit from that lens? Because obviously we're seeing some things on regular day-to-day basis, but also things that truly are going to shape the future outside of our sphere of influence.
I think we're already seeing it. You just talked about space with the Webb telescope. We're discovering elements of the universe that we didn't know existed. And it's explaining a lot of things that we haven't been able to explain over decades. And it's giving us a different perspective of how things in the future could be. And it also enhances, of course, the capacity of us to take these wonderful pictures of galaxies far, far away. So, but I think also you look at it now and the fact that we're going into the other thing, the satellite delivery with SpaceX sending up rockets basically cheaply. Now we have a ability to put up satellites that we never had before very easily. So that provides opportunity for better sensing and surveillance and communications, but it also provides opportunity for hacking. And we saw in the initial days of the Ukraine-Russian conflict, Russia hijacked a Viasat Ukrainian satellite. So we put, just like the internet itself, we put a lot of the stuff in space without security in mind. And we didn't think it, you know, who's going to be hacking a satellite. So, but now we have to look at that too, the securing the space systems, which is not just the satellite itself operating up there. It's the ground relay stations, you know, it's everything else involved in its operational technology and IT combined. So I think that area is now getting a bigger focus because we're so dependent on it. So, you know, I'm happy to see that there's a lot more attention being paid to space system security, which had been neglected in the past. But it is a critical infrastructure, in my opinion, even though it's not listed as one. So I'm happy to see that. And you know, I think again, this just this realm of quantum is very interesting because what will happen if we do have a quantum capability? It'll be millions and millions of times more capable than even the biggest supercomputer we have now. So think about the data, what it could do, how it could analyze, and the power behind it. And that's why there's a talk of what is called Q-Day, when one country gets hold of a real quantum capability, that they will have be able to take all the data in the world and translate it instantly, even the stuff that's encrypted. That's a fear. And it's a battle between largely right now between China and the West, the US and Europe combined, and also Japan and other places are helping the West side. But so quantum is a very real race. And so, you know, the way we look at things now and having the ability to use AI and do all these wonderful things, it'll just be exponentially impacted by combining quantum and AI. And so race would be super intelligence by that time.
Wow, that is so fascinating. And I know that for a lot of the people that are watching and listening, it's still hard to comprehend that we're already, as you said, there. It just the question is how much aware we are and then really comprehending the implications of this. I was talking to a couple of actual lawyers that specialize in space law, and I'm thinking, since this became thing, and it's, you know, and how do you even claim the stake in all of this, and how do you really practice and exercise this? Because I was just really fascinated about that, and seeing already regulations and some of the safeguards being put on also around that. Just shows that things are happening much faster than we're even willing, maybe sometimes to see or can really keep up with as a tremendous change. And I'm curious, what do you see some really exciting things as a result of it that really fascinating you the most, then, and it make you also obviously so dedicated for the continuation of the growth and expansion in that arena?
I have to say, you look at medicine, because I think what we've been able to do now with AI and genomics and all these things are basically radically changing our ability to be healthier, also to control diseases, to do all kinds of things. Of course, you have the opposite with COVID breaking up and pandemics, but I think that but our ability to actually contain them and understand them has also improved too. So. So I think in that area, the research that's going on, the nanotechnologies, the drug delivery systems, the drug discovery, basically rebuilding humans with synthetic parts, replacing organs. So longevity, I think all that area is really fascinating. It's being heavily enabled by emerging technologies. But again, you know, if you also want to look at the realistic application of this, it's also in the multi-domain war campaigns right now. You're seeing technologies now going towards robotics. And so although soldiers are really important still, you know, you're seeing a lot of use of drones, of robots going into places like tunnels, basically using the battlefield from satellites to discover things from above that used to be hidden forever. So you have the capabilities now, and also the ability now also for AI to make decisions on when to use weaponry and how to use weaponry. So, you know, there's a scary part to this too, but I see that, you know, usually DoD and DARPA and other places have done a lot with experimentation, looking at, you know, the kind of weaponry and defensive systems to use for this stuff. So it's a good way to get a barometer on what's happening, how quick it's happening. And it's also happening, you know, with our aircraft and stuff, and the speeds that we're going up, and the capabilities and materials we're using, really touches every single industry when you think about it. You know, it's just being changed. The question, how fast they adapt. And now we're also seeing that, you know, there's potential to have miniature nuclear capability to power data plants. And so a lot of stuff is changing so quickly, it's hard to keep track of it.
You're spot on, and I love what you also mentioned when you said that you have to obviously continue because it's progressing and you have to be ready for it, and it's rapidly changing, but also adoption of that aspects of it and also sustainment. How do you rapidly deploy something, but how can you also rapidly sustain? Because that's where I feel like it's a huge opportunity where we're falling short, and then obviously iterating and being more agile in a process to make that happen.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that's where strategy goes up front in the risk management. Sustainability has to be incorporated up front into this and planned. And really the lesson of all this is that all our strategies and risk management, things we were using before need to be adapted and updated because there are new implications of how you use it. And new benefits too. So looking at that area, sustainability and resiliency have to be really key components of everything we do. If we're all dependent on basically transmissions of the internet and electricity in our cars and everything like that, if we hit a EMP blast, electromagnetic pulse blast from a solar flare or done from a bomb or whatever like that, it takes out the whole network. So the more dependent we are on the internet and digital world, also the more vulnerable we become to other things. Again, like the CrowdStrike thing is a good example, or the Colonial Pipeline, where it took down the whole East Coast of supplies of energy. Is that you have a points of failure that affect more people, and so that's the risk of it. The benefit is we're just able to do much more productivity. Creativity and create new innovation that we never had in the past that we could really transform our society. So again, it's a good and a bad.
That is excellent point. And thank you for sharing that very vast spectrum so that people can really see and connect the dots. As we're also seeing now the power grid issues and with Cuba, for example, even though it's old infrastructure in a very different scenario, but since we depend with the power grid that we have and also what's in space, right, with satellites and everything else, it's so important to really look at things from multiple perspectives. I'm so glad that you have the view and opportunity not only to see it, understand it, but also obviously advise. So in closing, if you could have one message for all the leaders that are trying to really navigate all of this, right? It has never been as complex and complicated in C-suite as both of us know. The roles, the expectations, the pressures, and competing priorities. I remember jokes like you can't have a 10 different projects all number one priority and juggling all 10 of them, right? But we've seen something that really it's very hard to say what is the highest priority when you have simultaneously at least two or three different things co-depending and equally important. So what would you suggest in C-suite, first of all, to change, and then also from leadership perspective for them to change?
Well, first of all, for the C-suite, I would mandate that CISOs now be part of the C-suite because security is so integral to everything that's done digitally. The second thing I would do is that you have to have a chief emerging strategy person. It doesn't have to be a title, but someone that understands the transformation of what we're going through, because you have to really then reevaluate your strategy as a company or a business or an agency, whatever your organization, and look ahead to the parameters that you need to include now in what these various technologies do to your industry and do to your risk profile and also how they can be used for your benefit. So I think that takes a reevaluation of strategy and a new risk management profile. And I think it's an imperative now, for everyone. You can't be complacent. And that's why I say you have to look at in a proactive sense. Again, you can't be reactive to the next event that's going to change everything. We're all going to go running again. We have to look at things now. Now bolster yourself now, reevaluate your positions, look at emerging technologies as how they can be used to benefit, and look at particularly the new threat matrix that we're all facing because of the changing part of our digital world. So that would be my advice.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.